The Nerdist Podcast number 38 is generously brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/Nerdist. I said GoToAssist.com/Nerdist. The song you're listening to underneath my talking words is called Dunno, and it's by Duckworks, D-U-C-K-W-E-R-K-S. Who were kind enough to give me a music bed when I needed one so I could talk over it like this. Like I'm doing it right now, I'm demonstrating how to use a music bed. I'd also like to say I will be performing stand-up comedy jokes at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia, this Friday and Saturday, October 1st and 2nd. So if you're in the Arlington/DC area, or anywhere, come to that show, arlingtondrafthouse.com. And now this episode. Our guest was Paul Scheer. He is an hilarious comedian. He's been with the UCB Theater since the beginning. He's a member of Human Giant. He's also been on 30 Rock. You probably know him as the rival page to Kenneth by the name of Donnie Lawson. He's been on Reno 911, Sarah Silverman, Children's Hospital, Funny or Die Presents, and his current show is called The League. Incredible guy. Super nice, super funny. So let's all sit back and listen together. Yeah, I'm going to listen to my own podcast. That's how deep the narcissism rivers run.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It sounds big in here.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, it always sounds that way, doesn't it?
I don't know. I don't listen.
That's because we're in my huge mansion. Is this room actually stretching? Or is it your imagination?
That's a very terrifying image for a family, the hanging woman.
Oh, in the haunted mansion?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's okay because she's just one of the ghosts that inhabit it. Yes. I mean, if she wasn't dead, she couldn't inhabit the haunted mansion.
I just always
might live there. I mean, like, what are you guys?
Yeah, she would wreck it. It would be the lived-in mansion instead of the haunted mansion.
I look at, like, 8-year-olds' faces when that's happening. I'm just like, how are they processing that?
I always wanted them to, like, actually make, like, picture frames of those pictures and then that you could stretch down when it's on your wall.
I like
just kind of, like, it extends and so you can see them, you know, not almost getting eaten by an alligator.
That's not feasible.
Rob Zombie has one of the full unrolled
really?
Ones in his house, and you can actually see the roller marks.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It's in a massive, it's huge.
That's crazy. You know, Peter Atencio's uncle, Xavier Atencio, was an Imagineer.
That's not a real name.
It is. He we shot something at his place once, and he has like a headstone from the Haunted Mansion with his name on it. And also his name is up on one of the windows on Main Street.
That's holy shit.
Yeah, he also helped write the fucking theme song for Pirates of the Caribbean.
The fucking theme song.
When Napster first
out, Pirate's Life for me.
Everyone was downloading, I don't know, like Three Doors Down, right? That was a big band.
Savage Garden.
Everyone.
Train.
But all I did on Napster was download Walt Disney monorail announcements.
I did the same thing.
Everything.
I did the same thing. I got all these obscure ones from Frontierland.
Oh, yeah. They're the best. It's like there's one that's a rainy day on Main Street. It's like, oh, don't worry, it's a rainy day, but you can still enjoy all the amazing amenities of Walt Disney World.
That person you're listening to is Paul Scheer.
Oh, Paul
right
Scheer.
Now.
Oh,
comedian, God. Actor,
writer,
member of Human Giant.
Yes, dude.
If you go to Big Thunder Mountain, the train.
Sorry, BTM, right?
BTM. Yeah. If you go to BTM, the sign is so weird because it says something like, you know, it's a warning to pregnant people or people with bad backs or whatever, where, you know, it says, you will be transported through a... It's the wording is so specific, like, a pioneer-themed... It points out the fact, like, because this is pioneer-themed, this might be more dangerous.
My back cannot take a pioneer theme.
I don't like that FedEx has taken over Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Space Mountain used to be
FedEx took over Star Tours.
Well, it always.
No, I thought FedEx was basically.
But it always used to. They always used to have sponsorships. Like they always used to.
But they're more blatant now. Like they're really. I, or I remember, I feel like the last time I went, it was like the logos were on. Yeah. Like before, it used to be like, you know, like Tropicana sponsors the this tiki pineapple. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You'd be fine.
Now it's just FedEx Mountain.
FedEx Mountain, yeah, exactly. Or is it Duracell?
Well, you have to deliver packages now on Space Mountain.
They make you work for the ride.
Yeah, you have to like collate things according to zip code and then throw them down to the right
And then the tracks actually go underground and into the sorting room where you have to go
my
through.
My favorite warning was at Jurassic Park and Universal in Orlando. It said, if you have medical sensitivity to fog effects.
I'm
diagnosing you. Yeah. It seems as though you are.
Can you list off your allergies? I have medical sensitivity to fog.
You won't die unless you get into fog. Fake fog. Not real fog. Real fog, you're fine.
These are fog effects.
Here's what you can't do now.
I can't go to Guitar Center. Were you trying to fucking kill me? There's fake fog in there.
Rays. Can't go.
I'm very excited about new Star Tours and kind of want to go see Captain EO.
Yeah.
Is Captain EO coming back?
It's back.
Oh, it's back.
With a vengeance.
Yeah, Captain EO is back at Disneyland.
That's going to be kind of eerie.
Is that because Captain EO passed away?
Captain EO passed away and then they were brought back. But I feel like that's also like probably better in theory than execution because the effects were not redone. I believe you're just seeing like the old 1980s.
Just a nicer print. Like near the end of Captain EO, the screen was ripped. I'd love to see Captain Neo, where it's just Keanu Reeves.
Ooh,
like, that'd be awesome.
Apologizing for the last two Matrix movies. Oh, really sorry. I'm sorry,
just
guys.
Just another part of me. Squeehee. Jonah, let's talk for a second quickly about... you know, people always ask who does the theme song for the Nerdist podcast. It is the band Anamanaguchi.
Yes.
Awesome chip rock 8-bit music.
Yes.
And you put on a show with them at the Meltdown Comics
a couple
weeks ago.
Yeah.
How did it go? I was out of town, so I couldn't go.
It was awesome. It was a great show, great crowd. But the crowd that came was new young people that dressed up.
Are you talking about babies?
No, like, the new young people. No, it's just like, it was a weird, like, younger, like, kind of high school-y crowd.
What did they want to see?
They were there to see Anamanaguchi, the band. But it's a weird style of new nerd. It's a hipster nerd kid in high school that dresses like Pikachu. There was kids, like, in Pikachu hoodies. And
I've seen that.
That's fucking unacceptable.
Yeah, I don't get it because I'm guessing that this is now the gap. Like now
we're becoming Japan though. That's how I feel like people are dressing.
What it felt like. It was like just kids in dumb. Japan, yeah.
When someone's just gonna dress like the island of Japan.
I love that.
It's topographical graphic.
A lot of hats with ears.
Yeah, there was a lot of hats with ears.
Laughing at the other part? Was there comedy with the band?
No, I don't like to do that.
I think that's fine.
I don't think comedy and music really work well. As much as everyone involved would love for it to work.
Right.
What are you talking about? But we're just a bumper shoot. There was a great comedy.
No, but there was comedy in
separate stages.
Yeah, separate stages. It's not like a guy opening up for...
I see what you mean.
You know, Bring the Rock is a comedy music show. That's, you know, like, but like, say like a guy opening up for, you know, if a guy opened up for Weezer, it would have gone well.
I watched Naked Babies. Very funny sketch group, Rob Corddry, Seth Morris, Brian Husky, all these guys perform before Tenacious D in New York City when Tenacious D was at its height.
No one can open for them though.
No, yeah, well it's impossible. It's like no one, I feel like there's a weird thing too where the band is like, they're trying to appease their crowd, but their crowd has no conception, like they're not stopping the band from coming out. Like no matter how much you boo them, no matter how much you don't like them, the band will still come out at the designated time. I remember I saw A. Whitney Brown open up for...
He opened up for Roger Whitaker in La Jolla.
Little Feet, if you remember that. They're like a Cajun band. Yeah. And it was at the Syracuse County Fair in New York. And they were booing him and heckling him. And he just got so angry. He goes, "You are a bunch of idiots. Don't you realize that I was contracted to be here? I have to do 30 minutes. If I leave now, you're going to sit 15 minutes of silence." Ugh. And they were like, "Good, good." And he was like, "All right, fine." And then we sat there 15 minutes of silence. Wow. Yeah.
I opened up for Man Man in New York like a few years back, and it didn't go well. Because the Man Man fans are kind of aggressive. They're good guys, good band, but the fans, for the most part, suck.
Right.
And a guy who looked like a wrestler... started storming the stage as I was talking about Hulk Hogan.
Oh, no.
And his music. And like
Hulk Hogan's music?
Yeah, you know, the Wrestling Boot Band.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I Want to Be a Hulkamaniac.
I got that CD on my shirt.
Yeah. Yes, I have it on my iPod.
I just digitized my whole Hulkster collection.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want anything to
Hulkster in Heaven is one of the greatest songs ever. But like I was talking about this stuff, and the guy comes on stage and body slams me and then starts kicking
me. What?
Yeah, it was a horrible experience.
Now, why would you close your show with that?
That's a bad. It's got to end big.
In fairness
to him, you probably just didn't know how to fall right.
Yeah. Well, no, and then afterwards, the guy came up to me. He's like, "Hey, man, funny show." I was like, "What are you fucking talking about? You kicked me on the ground." Like, yeah, but it's all part of it.
He was doing the Hulk thing, like from Rocky III.
Yeah, he was basically acting like a wrestler, and like came up to me acting like it was like everything was cool.
You should Richard Belzer him. Remember when Richard Belzer sued the Hulk?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I just heard that Letterman was in on that Joaquin Phoenix bit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which is good and bad. It just makes that documentary like...
They should have come out with that information much later, not now.
Yeah, I feel like they blew their load. It's like, wait for the first week to go by. Well, let people question it. And then still, like, they just wreck it all before it's even out.
It's almost as bad as the time I saw Joy Behar open for Social Distortion.
That was a bad
combination.
But everybody, like, everyone was starting to freak out. Like, it's like, even Roger Ebert said, it's like, oh, it's so sad, this documentary. I can't believe.
Yeah, how fucking stupid. They had that whole thing going for 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years, people thought. He flipped his lid, and then right the week the movie opens, he's like, "Hey, it was all bullshit."
Yeah, and it's so crazy because I don't know. I mean, first of all, it's the only prank where everyone's like, "Oh, it's a prank! It's a prank! Yeah, it's a prank! Yeah. Oh, this is a prank! This is clearly a prank! It's a prank!" Like, no. And then just when you don't care about it anymore, it's like it was a prank. It's like, oh, yeah, we knew that, right? I mean, like, we kind of knew that.
I didn't even really know Kaufman and Jerry Lawler were in it together until I saw Man of the Moon. I had my suspicions.
Did Jerry Lawler play himself?
Yeah,
he did.
Everyone played themselves. It was a weird thing.
But I agree. Like, that's a good prank when they don't reveal it.
Yeah.
Like, keep you guessing. Come on.
Yeah, it was odd. But it's like, I guess everyone was like, you know, like he was like shaky on getting work now because everyone thought he was a crazy fuck up. I don't know. I remember. I knew it was a hoax right when it's like, oh, he's going crazy. That's kind of a bummer. Oh wait, there's a documentary by Casey Affleck. Oh, that's gonna be kind of funny.
It kind of feels to me like rich people going, I saw Borat. Let's do our own version of it, and sort of like not understanding why that was maybe interesting. And then
that's true. Some people don't understand irony and how to fuck with people. They're like, oh, so you just go out and fuck with people for no reason?
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, I'm wearing a blue shirt. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Huh? I'm fucking with him.
You just described every bad MTV prank show ever.
Yes.
Buzzkill.
What was that?
Buzzkill. You're getting married, but guess what? We dropped your wedding cake. Fuck you.
I just feel bad.
Yeah.
What was it? Boiling Points. How much can you put up with?
Boiling Points is a terrible idea for a show, too. I mean, everyone on it, very funny, Alison Becker, Colton Dunn. But it's also like, how much will you take until you yell at someone for being inept? And it was just like, it's a terrible position to put somebody
how
in.
How nice of a person are you? How forgiving are you?
Yeah, of how much can they
not break? Very forgiving.
I can't fuck with people like that in public. Ooh, like, I can't be a part of those shows. Like, Zach Galifianakis and Matt Walsh did that Comedy Central show.
Dog Bites Man.
I can't do stuff like that because I feel so bad fucking with people. And I also feel like it's, you know, it's sort of like slapping a baby across the face. Like, these people don't know they're being fucked with. Yeah. So, like, what's the challenge? What's the challenge, really, in, like, you know, going up to someone and pretending you're not who they have no idea you are?
Yeah, like, I feel like I live my life by the tenet of, if I don't want it done to me, I wouldn't want to do it. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, I wouldn't want to be eating at a restaurant, some guy in a, you know, bull costume comes over and starts prodding me with a stick.
Yeah.
Although that would be hilarious. But then on the other hand, I love to watch it. Like, Scare Tactics? Best show on television.
Yeah. I don't know. I like people being scared. I don't want to see other people being irritated because then I get irritated.
Right.
And when they went at the end, like $50, like,
yeah,
it's not worth it for me. I would pay $50 to not be irritated.
Well, you know, I guess the good thing about Scare Tactics is like Scare Tactics really goes like, it's not about irritating. It's like creating this weird world. Like the one that I saw that I love, I think about it all the time, is like this girl goes over and she's a caterer. And she's not in the main part of the house. She's in the kitchen. She's making stuff. And the other girl who's in on it comes in. She's like, oh, man, it's a weird party. This guy's a little weird. And he comes in, and the guy is super weird. And he's like, why don't you come out and just talk to my guests, serve them food. She goes out and it's all mannequins. and that was the funniest thing. It's so weird. So the guy is like, go, oh, this is Mitch. And Mitch meets Sally. And facilitating a conversation between a girl and a mannequin.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Then like he tries to freeze her and make her a mannequin, like
did they get Meshach Taylor to show up? Is that what they
put in that? Kelly LeBrock was there.
Did Starship close it up?
Nothing's gonna stop us now.
Howard Kramer did.
We don't have any more of those.
Mannequins?
Like, no, well mannequins, yeah.
But it's not making mannequin movies. What happened? Exactly, yeah. It's like two or three in. No,
let's do it.
The Scare Tactics. You're right, because in the first season, I think they were just making people think they were going to die.
Right.
And it was like, ah, all right.
And they turned to sci-fi stuff.
Then it turned weird, because the one that I loved was this dude who was babysitting this little girl, and the mother's like, I haven't really been out before because her sister passed away recently. And he's like, oh my God, I'll totally take care of her. It's going to be fine. And then... And the little girl's performance was
amazing.
Fucking flawless.
She starts to, you can see it a little bit, that she starts to smile. And the guy is like so freaked.
It's the moment that she goes and unplugs the TV and then it comes back on. And then they rig the thing to slide across the coffee table and he jumps up and he's like,
oh no.
And then they like a thunder effect outside the little girl standing
and then this little
coffee.
Dead ghosty girl appears
in
the window.
Oh my God.
And he calls the mom and he's like, you have to come home. It was so well executed.
That is one of the best. That is like the best skit.
Howard Kramer played a serial killer in a couple episodes.
Yeah, he was on a couple.
I wouldn't do well with those things. Like I usually like talk a big game, like I don't believe in like ghosts and possessions. But there was one time where I was making out with a girl, and then she had a seizure, like in the middle of making out, and like her eyes were just like dart. Like yeah, exactly. I got her so worked up, but her eyes like just like got real wide and darted forward, and like she like was clenching her jaw and like was like convulsing.
You know what I call that? Episexy.
But like I was like, hey, what's wrong? And then like I felt like every guy in a horror movie was like, what's going on? What the fuck is wrong with you? And like I turned on a light and she was just convulsing in bed. And then she stopped. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I sometimes have seizures.
She probably warned him.
Yeah.
Before you start making out with her, she should probably say that.
Yeah.
That's called an
frightening.
Orgasm.
I was so frightening. I thought it was going to be like, you know, in the first Friday or Nightmare on Elm Street where it's like she just starts getting dragged up on the wall and up to the ceiling.
It was not an orgasm?
It was not. We were just making out.
Did you go back to making out?
No, it's kind of hard to.
After that?
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
Actually, I think the word orgasm could be dirtier. I want to try to implement the word cumgasm.
Cumgasm?
Yeah. Did she have a cumgasm?
She totally did.
She had a cumgasm. It's a cumgasm, you freak out.
We, my wife and I, June, we were walking around today.
Also hilarious, by the way. Your wife is
very
hilarious.
Yeah. She's very, I think she's amazing. She, we were walking around today and just like, we went into an open house because we were just walking. We passed it. And we're looking in this guy's room. And he has all of his porn out. Like, it was an open house. Like, a realtor there, whatever.
What?
Stacks of porn. And presented as...
Were you on Scare Tactics?
I went. And then I opened one and just flew out of the case. But it was presented as if you would be like, oh, yeah, this is my DVD collection. But they all were just porn. And, like just gnarly kind of porn. All gay porn with like titles like butt slamming and like, you know, like hairless bodies, like dudes doing it. Like and you can tell
gay sex video.
You can see
cocks and butts too.
You can tell like
guys kiss.
The real estate agent tried to hide it by putting a picture of his family on the shelf like in front of it. So it was like two elderly people surrounded by a collection of hardcore porn, which was next to a bed that had a doggy ramp on.
Doggy stand.
It was like, and then we walked into his closet and there's a nice solid leather vest in there, like
nice.
A big ass.
Look at like the two old people like,
would you like to see our collection of Admiral Stroke Whistles, Hairless Boy Parades?
This is your life's work.
Cumgasm, don't
you? You want a cumgasm from Drunk on Cock 4?
Hey, this is...
This is a good time.
Guys, I just have to take a minute. Welcome on. Sponsor.
Oh my God.
Hey Chris, next time when we prepare your sponsor, say the word cumgasm before you do the sponsor thing.
Oh.
Please don't mention Drunk on Cock 4.
I will tell you, though, probably next week's sponsor will be Adam and Eve after that.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? But seriously, guys, this episode is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. So if your job is in tech support, there is a very easy way for you to save time and money. It's GoToAssist Express, which is brought to you by Citrix. GoToAssist is an easy and secure way to support your clients and colleagues online. It enables you to see a problem on their machine without having to be there in person, and then you solve it! I got angry for a second. But it's specifically designed for small businesses and professionals to support their clients. And the best part, you don't have to pre-install software on your customers' machines, which means you can start supporting them online instantly. Go to Assist Express. You get 30 days for free. And go /Nerdist. GoToAssist.com/Nerdist. GoToAssist.com/Nerdist. So, gay cumgasms.
Yes. But I would think that if you were to show a house or even have people over at a house, no matter how open you are, you don't want to hide that porn or you want to put it out on a main show.
I've seen Designed to Sell. It's actually some of the things they recommend.
Really?
Put your gay porn everywhere.
It was gay porn and silk stockings. Remember that?
Yeah.
So he had season of silk stockings and gay porn. This house is amazing. I kind of just want to buy the house and preserve it as a museum.
You know, I think about silk stockings, not enough gaping male buttholes.
So I just think Weird Science, Duckman, and Silk Stockings.
Yeah, those like I love Duckman.
Duckman was
fantastic.
What was the show that Jim Carrey was on?
The Duck Factory.
Oh, I would like to correct
the straight man. He was not a funny guy.
I would like to not correct something, but add an addendum to your show. Dana Carvey Show, yes, it's on DVD. And you can get it. Last week there was a conversation about that.
A couple people on Twitter said that. I didn't realize that.
I don't understand why we didn't know that, though.
It's very cheap. I got my copy recently for $11 used on Amazon.
Hey, that's awesome.
So go pick that up.
Why was that a better advertisement than what we're getting paid for?
I got paid by Dana Carvey. He sent me $15. I just mentioned it casually. But as a fan of that show and listening to it, I wanted to.
Yeah, there was comments on the site of people going, here's a link, assholes.
Oh, okay.
How much of a fan are you?
You fucking jerk.
Yeah. That's exactly how you said
it. I was at a taping of one of those shows.
Really?
Whoa.
Yes. I didn't know what it was, and I was like, I brought my girlfriend at the time who hated it. But it was It was amazing. It was crazy. He was doing Charles Grodin impressions, and it was stuff that was so bizarre. And when I remember seeing it on television, it was heavily edited. So the DVD, I think, restores most of it back.
Damn. Yeah, those, and then, I had stolen a VHS tape from MTV in the 90s, which had, the best of the Ben Stiller Show.
Oh, wow. The MTV one?
It was the Fox one, but for some reason they had it, and some of those sketches were...
That's on DVD.
Yeah. You can get the complete series on there.
Speaking about stealing things from MTV, when I was there, long before Human Giant, there was that show called Fanatic. And I opened up a locker one time and found all the submission tapes.
No!
And that was like hitting a jackpot of insanity.
Did you take them?
I did not take them. I remember sitting there and staying until 4 in the morning. Because it could never be more than 3 minutes long. So you were just watching nuggets of insane things. I love Jason Priestley. Here's movie stubs of every time I saw Calendar Girl in the theater and 8 seconds in the theater. It was like a formatted book and just Jason Priestley pictures and just insane, people's rooms just decorated.
Did you see Matthew Myra's I Love Dave Matthews submission tape?
I've been to every several
42 of them.
Okay.
They're all good.
Hollywood
Bowl was terrible, though.
Really? Why?
The Hollywood Bowl show, I don't know what was going on with the sound that night, but it was awful.
Oh, it must have been you actually heard him for the first time.
You know what happened? Dave Matthews probably drank the water.
Have you met Dave Matthews? Have you seen him 42 times?
I've seen him 42 times, yeah, in concert.
So what's the closest you've gotten to him? Have you gotten past being...
No, I've been front row. That's as close as...
Well, we got news for you, Matt. Come inside!
I'm from South Africa.
Will he crash into me?
He will.
He's got more of a drawl.
What?
He's got more of a Virginia drawl than a South African accent.
I didn't realize that.
I'm sorry. It's okay.
Would you suck his balls if you got to go to a free Dave Matthews
concert? I'd lick them.
Every...
I wouldn't suck them. I would lick them.
You would lick Dave Matthews balls if you got free tickets to every Dave Matthews concert forever.
No.
Matt, I have to say that I feel like you are a good compulsive fan because it doesn't
seem like...
He's
a good fan.
Yeah, you haven't reached out to him. Yes, it's 42 times. It's a lot, but you have not gone past that. You are
an
audience member.
I just enjoy and please.
You know what?
And
then I think about my fandom and stuff, and I'm a bad example because I was always like, oh my god, I bet Weird Al and I would totally be friends. And now we're friends. That completely negatively reinforced my idea that I could be friends with people I was fans of.
I have to find the right mode to get into a conversation with somebody I respect too much.
Who do you like? Who have you met?
Well, let's see. The person that I couldn't say a word to, Joss Whedon, who I'm a huge fan of, we were in the same elevator, we were on the same floor in the same hotel room during Comic-Con. Or not the same hotel room, hotel.
You were in the same hotel room as Comic-Con? You didn't talk to him in the same room?
To him.
He didn't know.
It was weird.
He would steal the blankets, and I just would kind of pull without saying anything.
But he was a guy, I was in the elevator, we were alone, and I was like, this could be a moment where I could say something, there's a definite out, and I just... put down my head and didn't say a word. I was too frightened.
Wow.
I was too frightened. But Weird Al, great example of a person who is my entire life fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Even when my mom took away my Weird Al Yankovic in 3D because my mom became a born again Christian at one point, and they put it on an
3D
album.
Is no good.
Well,
it was on
Danger Trail to Hell.
Yes. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Like Weird Al is the cleanest, most family friendly act.
But it just shows you like this how dumb they were. Like it says hell.
Yeah,
clearly wanting these kids to go to hell, and so we had to break my Weird Al album. But then I got it back.
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Too.
Yeah, I got it back eventually.
You know, my cousin had this insane Beatles collection of stuff that today would be worth so much fucking money. I mean, he was collecting the stuff before people really commonly did that as a thing.
Right.
And my aunt totally went Christy on him and made him sell it all.
Was it because
you shall not have false idols.
Oh.
I was like, oh, so heartbreaking.
I thought it might have been because of the bigger than Jesus comment that she...
Oh, no. I mean, I'm sure that didn't help. But it's a good thing, though, to get real religious and then, you know, like, hey, there's people sleeping in the streets, but I'm going to focus on this one dumb thing.
Get rid of all that Beatles stuff.
Yeah. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. That's right. Really? Yeah. Are you sure that's really...
Yeah, get it out of here. So get that stuff out of here.
Keep him off the streets, you know? He doesn't join a gang or anything. He's a pretty nice
kid. He likes the Beatles. He's worth the devil.
You will be the one taking a nature trail to hell.
Is there anyone else that you met that...
Who did I meet that is... I've met and worked with a little bit Damon Lindelof, who is...
Yeah, let's talk about your involvement. How did you and Hubel get involved with Lost?
Hubel really did not get involved with Lost. It was only really me. He hosted the show with me at UCB.
Okay.
But besides that, it was... I was doing this movie, Piranha 3D, which just came out. And,
awesome movie.
Insane movie.
I think my friend Josh Stolberg directed that.
Did
he write it?
He may have written it. Alex Aja, French director, directed The Hills Have Eyes. Josh Stolberg, did he write Sorority Row?
I can't remember.
Okay. I don't know. The writers came and visited one day, and they were very nice. But they were also rewritten by the French director and his partner. And the script read sometimes like it was in Google Translator, which was amazing. It was like, you must not go now. Spring break fun, yes?
They're on a dick eating, yes?
I used to write these Lost blogs, and I got a phone call from the person who cast me in Piranha, and she was like, hey, I'm friends with Damon, and he wanted to know if you'd be interested in doing this thing at Comic-Con. And I was like, yeah, I would love to do something at Comic-Con with them. And so the whole thing was they were going to launch this new website called like Damon Carlton and the Polar Bear and give away these exclusive art prints. So that was like my first foray with them, is like getting in like big conference calls with like Damon Lindelof, Carlton Cuse, Jensen Karp, who did all the art. He does this cool gallery 1988, and then Noreen O'Toole. We just all kind of had this little conference, and that was fun. And then he is, I wouldn't say he was a friend, but he is a nice acquaintance. He came out to see Piranha when I had a little group of people go to see
it. He's great. Yeah. First of all, that Gallery 1988 show that had the Lost art at it was
so good.
Awesome. There's also a Gallery 1988 in San Francisco as well.
Yes, that's right. Well, the Gallery 1988 right now is doing an amazing thing. Goonies, Ghostbusters, and Gremlins.
Three G's,
which is just all artwork inspired.
Yeah, let's talk about Gallery 1988 for a sec, because some fucking jerk got my original Steve Martin the Jerk.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
That, the reason why I scooped that from you is because of Lost.
Well, when I heard that it was you who bought it, so there's this guy, the artist's name is...
Why am I forgetting? He's so good.
He also did the McFly family.
Yes, his name is...
I asked him to do that.
I
asked him to do the McFly family one as a commission, and I'm like, but you have to do the McFlys in two different timelines. I want you to do two portraits, in a giant locket kind of frame.
Oh, like that.
Why have I never seen this?
Kirk Damaris.
So I asked him to, because he does these really awesome like hand drawn colored pencil.
It's like
sketches.
A Sears portrait of
famous movie families, and so he did the one of the Johnsons, Navin Johnson, and this black family, and so I tried to commission him to do. The two different McFly families, like the slick one and then the old one, and then to just have them both say 1985 on both sides.
Oh, that's great.
And then what ended up happening was he just did it, but didn't do that. Just did one of the timelines, and then I didn't get it.
Even though
I fucking asked him for it.
I tried to get him to do a McFly one where they were disappearing.
Oh shit!
That was the one I really wanted. I wanted half of their bodies to be there that well.
I just found out. You know the church on Highland and Franklin?
Yeah,
yeah.
The basement. That's where they filmed Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
What?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
The church that supports AIDS, right?
Yeah, they're open to everybody.
AIDS
church.
I don't know if they support AIDS.
Well, they got the big AIDS ribbon right.
I don't know if that means hey, we're right behind you, AIDS.
Big fans of AIDS.
I think. When there's a big line there and they're just giving out AIDS.
Exactly.
You think they're really just giving out AIDS to the homeless?
That's what I think. Yeah
exactly. Because you'd have to pay for it.
How else are we going to get rid of them?
That's so crazy. That's where they shot Enchantment.
The basement there. Not at Whittier High School. Where
I did not realize was. That.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks,
so
Internet.
I get it, Matt. So that's where they shot the Fish Under the Sea dance.
I scooped you on the Jerk one because I was working. I was the day I went in there to kind of meet and look at all the paintings for the Lost stuff. And he was opening up this... That night they were opening up the gallery for this pop culture art stuff, and I saw that Jerk painting. I was like, can I buy this? Yeah, buy it before the show opens. So I bought it before.
I never had a chance.
Yeah.
I did buy the print though, it's gorgeous.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That show is called Crazy for Cult.
Yes.
And that was the fourth one this year.
Yeah.
And they're also known for doing I Am 8-Bit, which is all the art based off of old video games.
It's really a cool gallery.
They're doing great work there.
That guy Jensen.
The cool thing about the 3G show is that they got a lot of artists that don't normally do those other two shows.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's like it's a lot of a varied.
I feel like right now I have a lot of too much pop culture art.
It's
office.
A dangerous road.
Office now, I'm like, oh, I should switch this up just a little bit. Yeah. It's too many Ghostbusters, too many Goonies, too many things like that.
Yeah, I have the Pee Wee's Big Adventure by Dave Perillo.
Oh, yeah.
The board game one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have that one, and I have a UHF by Tom Whalen. And it's becoming a bit too much pop culture.
Yeah, you don't want your house to look like a pop culture gallery.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I sure love all these movies.
Yeah, and it's better to go for the ones that are a little more vague, though. You know,
yes.
Just that it looks cool, but it also happens.
Well, the one that I just bought was this. It's a print of those old catalogs where buy a Cadillac or buy old kind of hand drawn car things from the 40s or something like that. I bought that. But it's for Hill Valley.
Oh yeah.
It just looks traditional men in fedoras and women, and then up in the corner there's a little flying DeLorean.
Yeah, my friend Paul Bonanno got that.
Why does Biff get so pissed off when he sees a flying DeLorean?
I bought,
he gets so mad about it.
I bought this one from an artist named Dave Perillo. It's
it's the one that did the
Twilight Zone A to Z.
That was a Twilight Zone they had. So they had that show there too. Yeah.
A is for aliens. B is for beauty. C is for cookbook. It goes all the way through.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah, Dave Perillo. Same guy that did
podcast listener. Chris just pulled out the print.
Dave Perillo and Tom Whalen, the guy who did the UHF one, and but those guys have a place their own little gallery workspace in Philadelphia, which is really awesome.
It's so cool. Yeah, I love that sort of stuff. Yeah.
But anyway, why does Biff get really pissed off in part two?
What is
Biff? In the beginning of the end of Back to the Future, well, I guess it's at the beginning of part two, he gets so angry about seeing a flying glory.
He doesn't understand, and that's what makes stupid people get angry.
He immediately thinks something is going on instead of, hey,
it's a remnant of a timeline, even though it hasn't happened yet, that he remembered that he got in and he got hurt by that.
But it is pretty, yeah, I always wonder, like, how the fuck does he know how to...
What the hell is going on here?
Does he know how to fire up the time circuits like that?
Well, I mean, it's...
Doc Brown probably is pretty smart about making things aesthetically easy to use.
It's right there. You just turn that.
You turn that little switch.
Circuits go on.
I don't know. Huh? I don't know about that. That's the only problem with Back to the Future. That's that one part.
I love that Back to the Future 2 was supposed to, or Back to the Future 1, originally it was not a DeLorean, it was a refrigerator.
Yeah.
Which was a terrible idea for not a kid's movie, but a movie in which young people will see it. Get in this refrigerator and go back in time.
Yeah, it was a refrigerator and Eric Stoltz.
It was a refrigerator, and they had to be near a nuclear explosion.
Has anyone seen the Eric Stoltz footage?
Just
October 26th,
everybody. The new DVDs.
The Blu-rays, there are snippets.
Oh, really?
Of actual moving footage. So I'm guessing at least 30 frames with sound.
We got to get Eric Stoltz on here. I wonder if he'll talk about it.
I want to know his voice. That'd be awesome if the voice was like the exact same that Michael J. Fox used.
I heard that he
Are you kidding? Eric Stoltz would be like, he's so understated. He'd be like, are you trying to tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean? Like, he's so understated, like in some kind of Wonderful.
He's also, they said it was too serious.
Like
it was playing dramatic. But, I mean, time I look at pictures from him in that movie, it's like, they shot a lot. Like, it wasn't like a week. It was like, they put in some time. Like, There Will Be Blood, that was the same thing. They shot, like, for 3 weeks with another guy, and then they replaced him with Paul Dano.
I think they did, like, almost half of the movie they shot with Eric Stoltz.
I didn't realize it was that much.
Yeah, it was a lot. I think they did, like, 3 or 4 weeks with Eric Stoltz, because I think that's a huge decision to be like, uh-oh, we got to recast our main actor. Like, that has to, like,
but they
you have to shoot enough to know that that is a, you know.
Didn't they want Michael J. Fox, but he couldn't do it because of family ties? And then they decided to make it work after, like
he would work 24 hours.
Why, because Kim Gunn was executive producer?
I like the idea that it would be, like, played seriously. I don't know. I think that if it was played for dramatics.
No.
But Michael J. Fox plays it seriously, but it's funny.
I think it's great. I wouldn't mind seeing it, like,
I
done
still,
that
every
way.
Time the DeLorean goes off of his table into the thing and it lights on fire, I laugh. I still laugh.
Because he does that.
And also, when he says that, I'm sorry, I apologize, I don't have enough time to build it to scale or to paint it.
But ultimately, I guess it all worked out because he wouldn't have received any residuals anyway because apparently that movie's not made its money back, according to the studio. Biff.
Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson has made no residual, like, none of the actors have made residuals off that film because the studio claims that they're still in the red.
It's still in, like, the top 30 of all time. Still.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Yeah. It's so fucking crazy. Like, the way studios manipulate.
Did you see how they made Harry Potter and The Prisoner of Azkaban? They made it like, it lost money. They decided that
it lost money because I needed a jet.
$200 million.
I needed a jet to fly around and tell everyone we lost money.
Aren't they working on a movie that made
$1 billion?
Aren't they working on a Back to the Future video game right now?
They are.
The new one that continues the adventures. That and Jurassic Park.
That's funny, is that when Rob Zombie was shooting House of 1000 Corpses, he was like, we would have meetings with the studio where they would tell us we were running out of money, but it cost $1,000 to cater the meeting where they were telling us that we didn't have any money.
Oh, man. Speaking of movie news, I just heard this. My girlfriend went to see the double feature at the New Beverly of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey. Alex Winter was there, and they asked him if he was going to make another Freaked. And he says no, but he is currently working on pre-production for a remake of The Gate.
Are you serious?
Yes. Alex Winter is going to direct a remake of The Gate.
But I also hear that they're going to do a new Back to the Bill and Ted's.
He didn't mention that. Kind of pushed those away, but like because he's working currently on The Gate, which I think is awesome.
You know, at least make it with black people. I can totally understand like an urban reboot, but don't just make, like, if you're going to reboot it, like totally reboot it.
Yeah.
Don't just cast two, like, server guys. Like, don't fucking do that. That is offensive.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to Fright
Night. Do it with Indians. Do it with Indian guys. Indians the new black.
Do you think Fright Night's going to be good?
Well, with Tennant, I think it's going to be awesome.
Did you see that picture of him as, like, the Chris Angel-type magician guy at Vegas, like, at the Hard Rock? They had the banners up for, and it's David Tennant. as like a Chris Angel type guy, and that's who he gets to fight the vampire. How great is that?
That's amazing.
What show are you nerding out over, any shows currently?
Right now, I'm getting excited for shows because
Las Vegas Law. You're getting excited.
Walking Dead.
The new Jimmy Smith show. I'm really
Boardwalk Empire starts tonight.
Yeah. Oh, it does. Yeah. Well, by the time this goes up, it'll have already aired. So
isn't it? Wasn't it great?
It was awesome.
So good.
The way they captured the
Buscemi.
Love Buscemi. Walking Dead, 100%. I'm very excited about that. I just got the comic of that. I wanted to read some of the comics before I started watching.
See, I'm not going to read it. I want to watch it. And then I'll read it.
And then I'm, what is that? Oh, I saw the first two episodes of Eastbound and Down.
Oh, no.
Are great.
Of the new season?
The new season,
it looks so good.
And it's really, really good. It's Jody Hill, I think, is directing all of them this season, too, which is great. And I feel like it's awesome.
How many are they doing? Six again, or are they doing more?
I don't know. I saw two. I don't know. I would imagine probably between six and eight.
Yeah, there's a couple of those HBO series where it's like that and Bored to Death.
Yeah.
Which are like ones that I wanted to get into, but I just haven't. I kind of like to wait till there's a bunch of episodes banked, and then I can just watch
it. Somebody still help watch me get into Bored to Death.
Dream On. Are you guys watching Dream On?
Dream On. I'm still waiting until it gets really.
Don't
really
spoiler alert. I don't want to know if they get back together.
So just I'll probably cut this out, but just so you guys know, I will cut to a movie, an audio clip from a movie.
And that's the truth.
No one will get that but us.
What was the, I'm trying to think of the...
Herman's Head.
No, that other show, Mind of a Married Man. Mind of a Married Man or something like that?
That was Mike Bender.
Mike Bender, yeah. Oh, but you know what? He didn't have to be talking to him. I just remember being really uncomfortable because there was one scene, he's like, I love the Three Stooges and I love blowjobs. Like, I never get two of them together. And then he got a blowjob while watching The Three Stooges. And I remember even thinking to myself, like, oh, this is wrong.
Oh, I thought he got a blowjob from Mo Howard. Come here, you two. And he just slapped his balls.
Hit
him with a hammer.
Me and Mike Henry, one of the other writers on Web Soup, were looking at the
post. What show was that? I don't remember.
Well, I mean, Mike Henry. But like
we worked on a show together?
We did. Why
was this?
Earlier this year and not forever again.
But, I haven't seen any new episodes in a long time.
I still get the Google Voice mails from all the numbers that we put up on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the voicemails.
I miss WebSoup.
Yeah. But me and Mike Henry saw the posters for Mike and Molly, which, like, I've never seen a promo for it. I just saw, like, a blue-collar-looking big dude and, like, a doting wife looking up at him. And so we started playing a game of, like, supposed lines that might be in this shitty sitcom. And so the ones we came up with was, it's like, hey, Mike, can you take out the garbage? And then Mike says, I will once they're done doing their homework.
That's a great joke. Oh,
thanks.
But I will tell you, that guy,
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa is a very good friend of mine.
She's good. I like her in Gilmore
Girls.
She's
hilarious. You know, Missy is Jenny's cousin. I remember when we were doing the Singled Out comedy program, and Melissa was interning basically for MTV, and she was so fucking funny, and it was just like, why don't you have a show? And so it always makes me very happy to see, like, whenever she's on something, because she's a fucking insane improviser.
Really?
Have you ever seen her improvise? She's more of a Groundlings background. Were you always UCB?
I was always UCB. I started in UCB when they were on the 5-floor walk up in New York City above a hardware store that you had to, like, go around this, like, rotting out steps, like, up to the 5th floor, because there was, like, one elevator, but it only holds, like, 3 people at a time. It was like, I remember seeing UCB do ASCAT in an audience of, like, 7 people. It was like me, Andy Daly, and a bunch of people that, if I name their names, it's not going to make a difference. But me and Andy Daly, I remember watching it and we're being like, whoa, this is amazing. And then it became like this huge.
Did you go to New York to do comedy, or were you just
there? I grew up in New York on Long Island, and then I moved into the city and I joined this thing called, like, Chicago City Limits, which was like a whose line is it anyway? Like, kind of like, every time this bell rings, our actor's going to have to say something different. So, like, I was doing that and, like, touring around the country with that when I was in college. And then one afternoon stumbled upon UCB and was like, this is mind-blowing, and then, like, stopped that.
Boy, those are so great, those moments. And it's, you know, like, the older you get, the fewer of those moments you have where you feel the scope of your universe widen, when you're like, you can do comedy like that? You know, I feel like, you know, I kind of had that moment when I saw Black Dynamite again earlier this year, but there's so few moments like that anymore.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, and because I feel like you get maybe, I don't know if it's you getting jaded or if it's also just like, you're naive to a certain extent. So like, yeah, when you see new things, it's like, oh, you know, it's like I'm always trying to, I mean, it sounds dumb to say it, but I try to watch and see as much stuff as I can because I feel like I don't ever want to like just get so focused on like this one thing. I was talking to somebody, I was like, you notice like certain like comedy directors just get like go bad after a while too. Like it just like, and we're done. And then like you know, like the movies that they make are like great for, you know, 1992, and then they like, and they've peaked, and then you'll never
see them. You can say Ivan Reitman, it's okay.
But there is like, there are those moments, and it's like, it's, I think the only way you can try to stay ahead of it is like always watching new stuff.
I think, yeah, I like the idea of just continuing to be a fan of things. Yeah. Like, you know, and not getting jaded, just like, well, I've seen everything I need to see.
You know what's great too, and the Nerdist thing of nerding out, like what I love it, but I just haven't watched a bunch lately, was Delocated. Have you guys watched
those? Delocated is amazing. It's John Glazer's show on Adult Swim, where he's the Witness Protection Program reality show.
It's amazing.
Show.
If you have not watched it, go to iTunes, download Dog Mayor. John runs for Dog Mayor. I think it was one of the funniest episodes of television I've seen.
Such a good show.
So good.
John Glazer is an hilarious comedy person.
Yeah.
Well said, Chris.
Thank you. Yeah. It's because I use the article and in front of others. Yeah. Well, I think it's still acceptable to not use that. Anyway.
I think also seeing young people, like, not young people, but, like, I feel like there's a lot of people like, I don't want to watch these. Like, I think you get into that mold where you only watch your peers at a certain point.
Yeah.
And I think you have to, like, challenge yourself. Be like, well, I want to see this thing that maybe, you know, I don't know, like, it's not beneath you, but, like, you have to, like, always be, like, kind
of, you know, the truth of the matter is that even if you watch something that's, and I'm not saying this as someone who has the energy to go out and do this anymore, but even if you watch stuff that's terrible, it's still good to see, like, okay, well, that's what you should not do. Like,
yeah.
It's still, like, it's all good. Like, someone's telling me that, you know, if you hit a wall, like, I wish I remember who it was, but if you hit a writing wall, go to the library and just start reading anything. It doesn't matter. Like, you just, that means that your kind of, your brain sponge is dry and you just need to kind of start soaking in some new input.
Yeah.
That's just actually really good. I like that idea.
Yeah.
It is. It's good to go out and see stuff. Like, I feel like that's like, when I was like first starting off at UCB, I was at that theater like 7 nights a week and just seeing every possible thing. And it's like, now I'm like, oh, show 8 o'clock. Yeah. I'm about to go get dinner. Maybe I'll get dinner instead.
Yeah.
You got a wife and you're working all the time.
So, but yeah, it's good to go out and see stuff. And it's always like, oh, and then whenever I do, I'm like, this is awesome. Why am I not going out?
What was the experience like? What was your experience like at MTV? Because I was so thoroughly impressed when they picked up Human Giant. It was like, oh my God. Okay, this could be a return to the old days of MTV, like 80s MTV, where they, you know, showed the young ones and comedy programs and
Idiot Box.
And Idiot Box, you know, but
Liquid Television.
Liquid Television, you know, but like how did that happen, and what was the experience like? Because I feel like they did, it was a really cool move that they did that.
Well, I have to say, like, we owe a lot to this guy, Tony DeSanto.
I know Tony.
Yeah. And Tony is a guy who literally, you go into his office, he has pictures of the hills on his walls because that's one of the shows he's done. Then he has, like, the chainsaw from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then, like, a Darth Vader head. And then, like, you know, then, like, a Sum 41 gold album. And then, like, you know, and then a Jersey Boys poster. And then, you know, and then, like, a Rob Zombie thing. It's like, he is that audience of MTV, the audience who can kind of be like, yes, there's benefits in shows like The Hills, and there's benefits in doing like the Andy Milonakis show, and there's benefits in doing
Tony DeSanto shot my VJ audition.
Really?
Oh, like, wow. When I first started working for MTV, it was a show called Trash in 1994, and they canceled the show right away. But then they were like, do you want a VJ? And so they flew me out to New York to do a VJ test. I have it on tape somewhere. It's terrible.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm terrible, not Tony. And Tony shot it, and he was just such a fucking cool guy.
Well, Tony was like a PA on the Pauly Shore show, and now he's like running the network.
That's the thing with MTV. If you stick it out, you'll run it. Yeah. Later, it's like, because people leave and they take, you know, like, they leave pretty quickly because they're like, I'm going to go take a less stressful, higher paying job somewhere. But if you stick it out, you'll have an awesome job at MTV.
And Tony was like very much like, we had made a couple short films and they were brought to his attention. And he was like, yeah, let's do it and make it for a price. And we did it for a cheap price. And then our first season, we were in a round table of notes. It was kind of the worst possible thing. We had like a guy who like, he was the executive producer of Run's House. Giving us notes on comedy, like saying,
how do you take that when because you guys poorly. Have a tight comedy unit.
Yeah, we I have to say, like, thankfully we had this guy Tom Giannis who he worked on Tenacious D. He worked Saturday Night Live. He worked with Michael Moore. And he is, in the best possible way, a bully. So, like, he is big. He is imposing. He rides a motorcycle. And when, like, one of these nerds at the network is giving him a note, he's like, what? And, like, he knows what he has. And, like, he's able to intimidate notes out. He's able to, and all for the greater comedy good.
Like, the autism thing.
I mean, this is, like, we did a sketch where it was, basically, I get trapped. There was the idea that a mother has extreme strength when her child's in a bed.
Yes, I remember that sketch.
So basically, like, this mother starts a mother-son moving company. So the only way that she can...
With Linda Cardellini.
Linda Cardellini from, Freaks and Geeks and ER and stuff. So we, like, so she would put her son under, like, a piano, knock out the leg, the piano would drop on her son, like, oh, my son! And then lift the piano up and then bring it out the truck. So, like, that was the whole thing. And then, like, I'm nervous the entire time because she's moving me, and I go to grab this bookcase, and it falls on me, and she can't pick it up. I'm like, why can't you pick it up? And she's like, well, I can only do it if you're my son. So we go through this whole, like, I'm still trapped. We go under a whole lengthy adoption process. Yeah. She adopts me, like, it's now your son. And she can't pick it up. And then she goes, I guess I'll just never love my adopted son as much as I love my real son. And then it was like, cuts to a kid, and it was like, don't adopt. And that was like the end of the sketch. Like, an ad not for adoption.
But I also love the little kid's voice. Right. No mother can.
Yeah. It was like and that kid is actually on that show, The Middle.
Oh, really?
But it was so crazy because, so we had this end and we really liked it, and censorship department MTV was like, no way, you can't air this. You cannot say that adopted parents don't love their, you know, their kids as much as, but they would come at us with notes like, as if it was Oprah. Like, you know, it was like, it's a comedy show. Like, it's, you know, and so this guy, Tom Janis, told the censor that he was adopted and that he wrote this sketch because he needed to get out his feelings about being adopted, and then broke down the censor woman. The woman started, like, getting really emotional. She's like, well, the reason why I tried to stop the sketch is because I was adopted too.
And, like, did you shoot this? That's a fucking great sketch.
And so basically, like, he opened up, like, they got into this whole conversation about being adopted. Now, Tom never adopted. and just to get this sketch through. So that is
a commitment.
Yeah.
That is a good producer.
Yeah. So Tom was, like, our bully in the room, and then when we finished, and I mean, we got notes, like, we did this one sketch that we love, and if other people like it, it's fine. I don't know. It's one that we all love. It was called Hot Air Balloon Cops. And it was the whole idea that we were like cops, like you know, like chase cops, but we only had a hot air balloon, so we couldn't control. We couldn't go as fast as the cars being that we were chasing. We couldn't control which way we were going. And I remember the guy at MTV going, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you use a hot air balloon to chase these things? And I was like, and so, like, those were the notes. It's like, ah. Oh. So the second season, Tony was like, we told Tony, like, the notes we're getting are really kind of shitty. And he's like, okay. And he got rid of that whole round table of people and just gave us one guy who was amazing. And he was the guy who did Danny Milonakis' show. And he only cut one of our sketches. Two of them. But one we never knew was going to get on air. One sketch he cut was a trophy contest for making trophies. And he said it was like, it was too confusing because they're thinking, oh, I won the first place prize for creating the second place trophy. And he was like, oh, I'm really excited about this. And, like, having a number. So, like, the second place trophy will go to the first place winner. The first place trophy will be in the third place. So I was like, really confusing. Like, that was when he's like, no, we couldn't shoot that. And the other one we shot, which we was tough to shoot, but it was me and Kristen Schaal, and I was a ultra-religious abortion doctor. So I would give abortions, but so before I give her an abortion, I'd be like, Lord, please guide my hand to take out this fetus. So we, like, shot this whole, like, this ultra-religious abortion doctor, and they watch it, like, no. Absolutely. And we were like, you know what, in the grand scheme of things, those are the only two ideas that we could not get past MTV.
You know, and it's also, there's also a tactic that a lot of people use in the business where they will shoot something insane like that.
Oh, yeah.
To let what they really want to go get through, just to, like, catch the attention of the network.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do a religious abortion, Doug.
Oh, you're right.
Your other stuff through.
And to this day, we're not canceled by MTV. I mean, Tony and everybody, we would love you to come back, do something.
No, what happened?
Basically, Aziz got Parks and Rec. And we were on a hiatus. Aziz got Parks and Rec, and then Parks and Rec originally was going to be shooting in like August or September, and then Amy got pregnant, and they pushed it to January start. So we could have done a season three, but at the point in the where we
she
needed
to use
a
religious abortion,
yeah, she could have got an abortion
back on track.
But like that was the we had to make a decision in July, and knowing what we knew, we were like, well, Aziz is not going to be around, and then like, are we going to be like? We'll be like a, you know, a man down. We're gonna be trying to get the show going.
It's like those Stella shorts without Michael Ian Black.
Yeah. Like, we were a little bit like we didn't want to do that, and we were nervous that it would like wreck what we had. And I think the writing room that we had and what we created was really strong. And so we opted in a way to be like, let's not make a mistake and just kind of call it a day. And then we like got together and did some of the movie awards, which was really fun this year, which is, you know, so, but it's sort of like not for, and also I think we all, I think underlying it too is like, we all did, weren't sick of each other, and we didn't hate each other, and there was like a really kind of benefit, and like, oh, we're really proud of like what we just came out of, like, we all like each other still. Let's stop.
Everyone seems to be doing very well.
Yeah, everyone's been doing cool and good, and so it's been good, and we maintain friendships and work together, so we always are working together. So
how do you guys? How do you write? I mean, how do you? What's your writing process? I mean, do you kind of come up with the turn of, oh, it's a, you know, like what do you? Because there's a lot of great twists in.
Yeah.
I'm sounding like an asshole trying to explain it, but you guys have a lot of incredible twists in your sketches. Do you just kind of write a basic sketch and then just figure out how to start balloon twisting it, or do you start with a twist and then write backwards?
I think, you know, it depended on the sketch, and I think a lot of the times. Some of my favorite twists happen in editing. Like we'd be like, oh, you know what we should do? We can maybe put this, like, you know, we were always laughing because like we would always put like a graphic up or a black and white frame like these people died. You know, like,
yeah,
you know,
that's like, a classic way to go.
So like we always were killing our characters at dance. A lot of them happened in editing. And then the writing process was really kind of great, infuriating, and fun all at the same time because we would go into a room and then we'd just pitch ideas, like one sentence ideas a lot of the times. And then the whole group would have to be like, yes. And then we would go forward. And then that sketch, after it was written, would then have another pass. But like to even get an idea to the writing stage, we all had to be on the same page. We never wrote anything where one of us is like, ah, I don't like it. So like you would go in and pitch like 50 ideas and then be like, yeah, I think that there's something there. And then it was a matter of like, does it go from there? And I think We did so much rewriting and writing and writing, so that's when the twist would kind of come in. Like, how can we elevate this?
Was it just the three of you, or did you have a bigger staff for
the show? We did this amazing thing. It was the three of us plus Tom, the four of us. Jason Wolner, who was directed everything, and he was one of the major writers of the show. Like, the three, yeah. So Wolner, Hubel, Aziz, and I, Tom Giannis, and then we bring in this amazing collection of writers. I mean, Howard Kramer wrote for us, who did like Austin City Limits, and we just talked about him on Scare Tactics. John Glazer wrote for us and was in the show and was amazing. We had like Todd Barry, mm-hmm. and Eric Appel, and the, like this amazing list of
Jonah
this, like,
Ray came in for
Jonah that. Ray, Brett Gelman, John Daly, Morgan Murphy,
Brian Posehn,
like
Nick Kroll,
yeah. Like all these amazing people. Like every one of our friends would come in for a day or two and write. And I mean, when you came in, it was like you just pitched ideas, right? Then we had
It's like we all pitched, like I just, yeah, came up with a bunch of pitches, but then I also was in charge of writing one of Nick's ideas from like the week before.
Oh, yeah. So
it's like you guys all agreed on that one, and then like I had to write that one with Brian, which was basically just Brian Posehn watching me write it. What about this, Brian?
Yeah, I guess so.
So, I mean, we lucked out. I mean, we had Patton Oswalt in there. We had, like, we called it every comedy favor. And it was one of those things, too, where it was kind of fun because you would just, like, a lot of these people didn't have an outlet for a sketch. So it was like, oh, Patton, do you have an idea for a sketch? And he was like, yeah, how about this? And then, you know, like, Patton wrote that one sketch, the interview sketch we had, like, where it was, like, we go in for an interview, Michael Bush is and, like, Hubel blows up. It's, like, it's, but it was, like, really in Patton's voice. And we just kind of just surrounded ourselves with as many funny people as we possibly could, and that was the best thing.
I had so much fun when we did, we played South by Southwest a couple years ago, and we did that one show in Waterloo Park.
Oh, yeah, the Mess of Texas.
The Mess of Texas show, and then you guys did the T-shirt cannon, guys.
Yeah, that was
a fucking classic.
T-shirt cannon was amazing. Like, that was one that, like, not amazing. Like, I mean, the fence that we got to run around with T-shirt cannons. Like, we were just like, whenever we shot, like, a real, like, intense sketch, like, T-shirt cannons, we got a college to let us go on their basketball court during halftime. They thought that we were, like, part of the school to shoot T-shirt cannons. You know, we had actors in the audience and, like, you know, it's kind of nerve-wracking and, like, you know, we're shooting these, like, big canisters of air and... That was, yeah, that was a really fun thing. That was a John Glazer bit, the T-shirt cannon thing. Awesome. And, like, so that we, like, and that was something where we kind of all jumped on that idea. It's like, what if it was, like, a elite team of, like, T-shirt cannon guys? And, like, oh, what if it was, like, the A-team? Like, they're, like, it's like they're the ultimate force that you call in, and they get people psyched. And, you know, so it was, like, all just build. Like, we did a lot of building on people's ideas.
Did you ever, were you ever a stand-up?
No. No, I have never did that. I did only improv and sketch.
Do you not like, do you hate like playing yourself? Do you just like doing character stuff?
I started to do stand-up recently, like within the last 6 months, and it's frightening for me, and I feel like I can't hide behind anything, and I also feel like I want to get up a lot, and I feel like out in L.A. it's really hard to get up a lot. Yeah.
But you're so likable, Paul Scheer.
Oh,
so
yeah, nice to say that. Yeah, I mean, it's something I would like to try, but like I think the closest that I come to it is what Rob Hubel and I do. We do a show called Crash Test out here.
Yeah.
And that's so much fun because it's just basically us on stage doing like half bits or two, like kind of two-man stand-up in a way, and I feel like just to have somebody to interact with. I come from such an ensemble background that it's like fun for me anyway to be like, I'll do anything in front of any audience, like with somebody up there. Me by myself, like I'll get like nervous, like, oh shit, how am I gonna do that? We're going on a league tour this week. I'm going with like Kroll, this guy Steve Ranazizi, and John Lajoie, like all like accomplished stand-ups and performers. And it's like, what are you gonna do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like nervous. I got like talked into. They're like, well, you can do stuff on the road. I was like, oh, all right. Yeah, so like I'm in a panic right now about it. So maybe I'll try a little bit of stand-up that I've been working on, but I don't know.
Do you find the writing process different?
Yeah, very much different. I mean, because things that make me laugh, I don't know if that's like for mass consumption sometimes either. Like in my head, what I think is really funny, like I don't know if that always comes out the best way, like when I'm trying to do it in stand-up. I don't know.
Have you ever thought about, and this might sound stupid, so I hope it doesn't come across asshole-ish, but have you ever thought about writing for the character of Paul Scheer? Like, have you ever thought about putting your identity into a character and then writing from that point?
I think that's what I have to do, and I felt like one time when I did stand-up, I've only done like about like 10 or 12 times now, like the one time that it felt the most natural to me was like I kind of, the set was kind of around like an energy that I was more comfortable with, like kind of in the same way I did Best Week Ever. I think it was more like excitable and up, like, and not trying to be... Not like I was trying to be cool, but like just really embracing that energy. And it felt like, oh, everything I was saying in that energy was working. Not Dane Cook style. Not that there's anything wrong with Dane Cook style, but I wasn't like running around on stage. But but I was just like embracing a certain element of, So I think I should do that. I want to try to experiment with it. It's a challenge to me.
Interesting. And then it's very, you know, like getting out of this sort of insulated UCB environment, which is a fucking wonderful environment to do comedy in, but... You know, when you it's just different when you get in front of people with regular jobs that that don't think about comedy all the time,
that don't have time to wait in line on Franklin.
No, but
I mean, I used to tour around the country with Chicago City Limits, and we would go and like so that gave me a whole understanding of what it is, and then you have to like it's not there's a very small section of alternative comics like fans, and they'll come out to certain shows, but if you're going anywhere besides like LA, San Francisco, maybe Boston, New York, Chicago, and maybe DC too, the Arlington Draft House.
Yeah, Arlington Draft House, Austin.
I'm going to be at the Arlington Draft House. It's great place. Actually, I am going to be at the Arlington Draft House October 1st and 2nd.
Oh, wow.
Have you done it?
I think we're going there this week, so we'll be, I guess that's a while away.
This episode will go up. By the time this goes up, you will have just been there.
I've been there. Okay. Yeah.
Was it fun?
It was so much fun. The Arlington Draft House was amazing.
Yeah, I opened up for the Sklars there. It's a great place.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about it. I hope people come out. I never know if people are
going to. How do you write stand-up? How do you attack it?
I really wish I could go into the mode more of I wish I could do the Mike Birbiglia thing a little bit more, who is going to be a guest on the podcast about it coming up.
Okay.
But the way that Birbigs writes is, like, he fucking writes like it's a job. Like, he does the Seinfeld thing where he'll just write from, you know... he rented an office for a while, and I think he—I think there's a story where, like, I won't get him to tell it, but where he says to our other friend Jen Kirkman, like, I think we need to rent an office and just start writing like it's a job. She's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then he did, and then, you know, like, all this great material came out of it, and it's very hard for me to sit down and just, like, it's comedy writing time.
Right.
But I feel like it's important because I think it sort of loosens the gravel in your brain to get to the to kind of have those ideas pop into your head later on when you don't expect them, like if you're driving or you're in the shower or whatever, on a plane or whatever.
When I was like working on like trying to do stand up, like I like there was a time where it was like everything was just coming to my head. I was like writing down a million ideas, and it was, I think it was like once you kind of kickstart that one part of your brain, then it just you start to examine things that way. But I do a lot of writing that's not stand up too, so it's always hard for me to be like, oh, when am I? Oh, should I focus on that or should I focus on this? And you know, it's like, and you go back and forth. Like I'm like, oh, I'm writing the script, so I should maybe be. Is that a better sense of my time? Or you know, it's like because I feel like I always feel like, oh, I'm never gonna be like these. This, like you know, like Mike Birbiglia is a perfect example. Like that guy is working at it 90% of the time. So like, if I go up there, am I that like an insult to the world of stand up?
Exactly. Not at all. And I think something else that I started doing was, you know, if I came up with like sort of a turn on an idea that I think might be interesting, I'll just sort of throw it out as a phrase.
Right.
I'll just say that. I'll just like in the middle of a set. I mean, it helps that I'm on the road doing like hour long sets, but to just sort of throw the like this idea out there and see if there's any reaction. And if there is any reaction, then I'll take it home and just start trying to tag it out. And even when I would run out of, because I think I would have this idea like, oh, when I sit down to write, I have to come up with whole new premises. And then one day, like a year and a half ago, I was like, oh, wait, no, I don't. I actually went in. I went into a Starbucks for like 4 or 5 hours and just went through bits that in my head were done.
Right.
Like, I wonder if I can add anything to this.
Yeah.
And that really helped. And I came up with new tags on stuff and different ways to connect things. So it's helpful to go in and rework stuff. Even, you know, even if it doesn't work, it's just kind of gets you in the mode of.
Yeah. Well, to me, like, I've been recording all this stuff, and that's like really interesting too. You hear yourself say it because you can hear where you hear where the laughs are, and you're like, oh, let me just take out this chunk right here.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's like editing it. Like, oh, right. Yeah, that thing I said was kind of funny in the moment. Like, let's put that here. And
there's something else you can do, which is really interesting to try, which is take a set and then transcribe it.
That's what I've been doing,
You've been doing that? Because then you can see, you can almost see a mathematical representation of like, there's no joke for 3 inches in all of this is just extraneous. I either need to stick a joke in there or just cut it out, like you said. So that's an interesting way to do it too.
Did you find like I was talking to somebody about this too, like there is like somebody said like stand up's a song and people have to like want to listen to your song. Like, do you feel like you have, I mean, when I watch you, like you, I guess, but that, like, you know, you also have like a, it's that defined personality, I think, what you're talking about too. Like, I feel like, like, until you find that exact voice that you say all your stuff, because almost like you get to a point where you can try out an idea that you've never tried out, but they're hearing your rhythms and your voice, and it's sort of like, oh, I'm kind of not preconditioned to laugh, but they're into your...
Right.
Your rhythm. I think it's an interesting thing. Yeah. Like when you hear stand-ups, like if you listen to like a Jim Gaffigan or even Aziz or Kroll, they all have like a certain rhythm, and I think you do as well. Like, it's a sort of like, and as well as you do. Like, I feel like once you get that... once you get that rhythm, you can kind of like throw anything in there.
Yeah, I was talking about that earlier today with a friend of mine where it's like, you know, Louis C.K. can pretty much just talk about what happened to him that day, but he knows the rhythm to put it into where it just sounds funny.
Yeah.
And then from there, he can work into the jokes and flesh it out, but like he knows how to make things funny.
I am so enjoying his show.
His show is awesome.
I love Louis. I wish he would come on. I mean, Louis is a much better comic than, I mean, I think he's incredible. But he's under this new strategy of like, I'm going to come up with a new hour every fucking year, which is
amazing,
insanely ambitious.
I thought George Carlin would do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what he's modeling off of it, I think.
Oh, really?
I think I read in an interview, he was just talking about like, it's like that's how he kind of wants to do it.
That's what Doug Benson's doing.
Doug Benson's
now
doing an album a year.
Yeah,
every year.
Yeah, great.
I personally would rather, I mean, I kind of like tweaking stuff a lot. Like, I don't feel like I would want to do a brand new hour every year. Because I feel like, just because of the way that I work, I don't know about you guys, like, oh, I still want to add 5 more tags of this. Or, like, I don't want to just, okay, this is good. I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing I love about Louis, too, is he throws it away. Like, when the year is over, he doesn't, like, when he starts his new act, it's from rock bottom. He doesn't bring in old stuff. Like, he just did CDR a couple weeks ago, and it was like his year was up, and so it was like, all right, here we go. And he doesn't go back in that well and be like, oh, I'm bombing.
It's no,
like,
it's incredible.
It's like, okay, no, everything new.
Who else does that too is Paul F. Tompkins. Like, you'll see, like, he'll have a whole new 20 minutes, even though you saw him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Patton is the same way. He's got a whole fucking polished new chunk of material.
Kyle Kinane also. Every time I see Kyle Kinane these days, it's just like a new chunk of stuff.
Well, you know, the thing I liked about Paul on his last album, Paul F. Tompkins, was that he did 3 tracks of just improvised bits.
Yes.
And it was...
Oh, Freakwarf.
Yeah. And it was like, wow, that's impressive. It's And, you know, but like Paul F. is a guy too where I feel like I can just listen to Paul F. talk about anything. Like,
Yeah.
And that's another guy. It's like that, you know, that rhythm of, you know, it's like... It is like that conversational thing. It's like you're just getting great.
But all these guys that we're talking about have been doing comedy for over 20 years.
Yes.
So like you can see that if you... You know, if you stick it out, like working at MTV, if you stick it out, you're gonna figure it out if you're a smart dude, which you know.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing comedy?
I've been doing comedy, maybe for, it's taking me like 15 years.
Yeah.
But so, improv, yeah. I started in college and then like. Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, I've been at UCB since it first opened, so I always use that as a judge. So, 15. 13, in that more than 10, but doing improv and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. So that's been fun. And, like, these are guys that are, you know, doing stand-up. I mean, just think about, like, doing stand-up and, like, starting in Boston or New York.
But think about improv. I mean, like, you have an improv voice, right?
I could do improv. I mean... I hopefully I'm good at it, but I mean, like, I have no, like, and the same thing, I can go on stage with Hubel and feel comfortable. Like, there's certain relationships and people that I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's like, yeah, it's good, and you know, I feel like I still learn stuff, but it's sort of like, I don't, like, I'm sure Louis doesn't get nervous going up on stage.
Yeah.
Totally reminded me that I wanted to talk about the streamings before we wrap this up.
Oh my goodness.
First of all, yes. Okay, the Streamy Awards, you guys, were a delightful disaster.
It was a train wreck of epic proportions.
You, if they had anyone who was any, like, you were so talented. Like, it was so fucking incredible. Like, you were so enjoyable to watch, just because I went and sat through them and then presented award, and some guy put his dick in my
that was terrifying.
My pants, where my butt is kept. So, you know, like, there were all these technical problems, and superficial appearances, it was a professional show. It was at the Orpheum Theater.
Yes.
There was a crane. There was a big crane and cameras and a red carpet.
It was it really like looked like it could be something awesome. And from moment one, I remember being backstage right before. First of all, I knew that there was going to be a problem on the Monday before the Saturday show. I said, "When are we going to rehearse?" And they said, "Sunday." and I was like, I need more time than this. I mean, I need to get on the stage and see what's going on. They're like, oh yeah, we'll get you in at noon. The show was like 4 or 5. and I had all of, I would say, 15 minutes of rehearsal. And that was it. And this is a show with, you know, cameras on cranes, like you said, and, you know, monitors and people, everyone.
Tons of cues.
Tons of
cues. Which they missed most of.
And so basically, I remember being backstage, the show started, and there was a dance number that went on. And the dance number on camera, it was like bad Broadway. It was bad Broadway. And I don't have, no offense to those people who did that thing, but it was
no offense to the people who did that awful thing that I hated.
But it was like the camera work was catching people at the wrong time, so it was like... A really cool thing would happen, and they would hit in at the wrong moment.
Which is just a function of not rehearsing.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, being backstage watching it, and see, like, I wasn't seeing the picture that the audience was seeing, but I was seeing what the people at home were watching, streaming live, and I was like, ooh. And then my mic was on before the show, like, so everyone at home was listening to me, like, rehearse my monologue.
I guess what the thing that was so... incredible to me was, number one, it sort of bummed me out because I was afraid that awards didn't do internet culture any justice by all the stuff that went wrong. It sort of made it seem like, oh yeah, of course. No, for a second I thought that the internet might be a real form of creative expression, but it's pretty amateur still. But to watch you and Hubel and Kroll And then followed by, like, dudes who make fart noises on YouTube.
Right.
And you have millions and millions of subscribers on their YouTube channel. Get up and try to be funny in an arena that they did not belong in yet.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, to see kind of, like, amateurish comedy and then see you guys come back on. It's like, okay, there really still is something to being a trained, professional... comedian rather than just it really was interesting, the juxtaposition of those two.
I thought I took a little bit of flack because there's a community, like, look, I'm from, like, I mean, from the internet, but I mean, I perform on stage, but I've done stuff on the internet. I have no in my mind, like, distinction, like, these people are beneath me. Like, they're like, your monologue ripped on us and made our thing seem unworthy, and I was like, okay, first of all, watch any award show from the Academy Awards down. Like, that's what take the piss out of it. But no, I wasn't like, you guys suck. It was just like jokes. Like, no one's making any money.
And you have to, because you can't present an internet award show like, I think I speak for everyone when I say this is the most awesome thing that's ever happened. Like, you kind of have to take the point of view of the audience and be like, hey, you know, we're a young, kind of struggling medium, and this is, you know, we're just gonna have fun.
And there were people like, you can't, you by saying that we don't make money, you're perpetuating the myth. I was like, yeah, it's like, come on now. Like, I mean, we're all like, it's fine. Yeah. It was like,
are these people afraid of people not getting into the internet because they hear that you don't make money?
Yeah,
I was gonna check out this internet thing, but
no one makes money,
so I guess I'll just opt out.
And there were very great, nice people that I met there, and I just think that, you know, I learned a very important lesson, which is it is hard to do an award show.
You need to rehearse.
You need to rehearse. You just need to rehearse. I mean, thankfully, I had, like, BJ Porter there backstage, and it was great to be able to run off and try to figure it out. But it was, miscues all around, and yeah, it was rough.
But for the most part, all the internet video kids are really sweet, and you know, like, I hope it opens doors for them so they can get better training, because, you know, just doing webcam stuff is a very specific form of comedy, and you gotta get out and
do that's what actually Matt Besser from UCB would say that a lot. He says, like, you know, he would see kids that were just, like, you know, huge stars on YouTube come and try to do live performing, and they just don't know how to do it.
But you know who's awesome, though, is Bo Burnham, is, like, a dude who...
Oh, yeah.
Totally... Like, do you know?
The piano kid.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he's
also, like, a lot of those YouTube videos are, like, people doing, so, like, you know, it's not like, I don't know, some of the ones that I've seen are not talents, they're personalities. It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like the way that Perez Hilton is, like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I don't know what Perez Hilton's trait is besides being this guy who...
MS Paint, gossip. He's very high on the MS Paint scene.
MS Paint Cox.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, like, I feel like... people who put some energy behind their actual performance. Like, Bo Burnham, really funny guy. Like,
so we need to wrap it up here because we're just over an hour. But first of all, Paul Scheer, you are a delight.
Well,
it's so much fun
so,
to hang out with you. I always get bummed because I get lazy and cranky about going out and hanging out and being social, and then I hang out with people like you, and I'm like, God damn it. This is what I need to be doing.
I feel the same way. It's actually really fun. As a fan of the show, it was great to kind of...
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
So what is there anything that that you would like to promote?
Yes. I am on an FX show called The League right now. So
season just started.
Season just started, but now probably by your time you're hearing this, we're a couple weeks in, three weeks in. Okay. It's fun. Check it out. Really funny people on it. Amazing cast, but then amazing guest stars. Jason Manzoukas, Rob Hubel, Lake Bell, I'm forgetting a million people, Craig Bierko.
Love Craig Bierko.
Craig Bierko is amazing. It's really fun. I think, and it's written by Jeff and Jackie Schaefer, who Jeff writes and directs Curb and wrote Bruno and Borat with Sacha Baron Cohen. So he wrote on Seinfeld, and this is his new show.
That's great. So you've got The League, and then you are just at Paul Scheer on the Twitter.
Yes, right? At Paul Scheer on Twitter. Yeah.
Is there a website or something?
There is a website, paulscheer.com,
which is also your Tumblr.
Which is also my Tumblr.
Which is Scheer.
Thank you very much. Yes. Scheer.
Paul Scheer. Awesome, Paul Scheer. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Matt, Jonah, is there anything you guys want to promote before we get out of here?
Jonah and I will probably be having dinner sometime.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Comedy Meltdown every third Friday at Meltdown Comics in Hollywood.
Awesome. Great show.
Yeah, it's a fun show. You've been on it.
I've been on it.
You've been on it. You sometimes show up.
Hey. That's what I do.
And like I said, I will be at the Arlington Draft Cinema just in Arlington, Virginia. pretty close to DC, apparently.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
October 1st and 2nd. So come to that as well. All right. That is the end of the program. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.